We are back with On Second Thought from GPB. I'm Virginia Prescott. Whether you go yellow or white, sweet or savory, grits are a Southern food staple now popping up on menus all over the country. Food writer Aaron Byers-Murray goes deep in grits, a cultural and culinary journey through the South. She talks with growers and millers and chefs to understand the origins and evolution and significance of grits, and along the way examines how race, gender, and politics simmer in the significance of grits. Aaron Byers-Murray joins us now on the line from Nashville. Welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Now, you were born in Augusta, but spent most of your life outside of the South, not growing up eating grits. But you do open the book with an anecdote about your family's, let's say, less traditional use for grits. Can you share that story?
Of course. So we had moved from Augusta, and we were in Spartanburg at the time, and I was about 7 or 8 years old, and distinctly remember we had an issue with red ants. You know, that's one of the things about living in the South. You have critters. But we had some red ants crawling on our patio, and my father pulled out a box of instant grits, and he pours a little line of instant grits right along the line of red ants that were trying to come into our house. And we all come out about 20 minutes later, and all I see are these little ant bodies, like exploded popcorn along the patio.
Oh my goodness.
And, you know, from that point on, I just thought, you know, I was a little turned off by grits.
But you left the South, then you moved back to the South. What was it that changed your mind about grits?
Well, mostly my mother-in-law, who actually prepared grits when I first started coming to visit them. They lived in Knoxville at the time, and she would make grits every time we visited for weekend breakfast, and her grits were phenomenal. They were, you know, piles of luscious corn, and you could pour butter on them, and it was just that kind of brought me back to understanding that they can be this really delicious staple.
So you got turned around on grits, and this is something that we're hearing a lot more about, grits on, you know, fancy menus, and this traditionally had been food of the poor, but you spoke with chef and restaurateur Sean Brock, who told you grits are the ultimate expression of terroir. Now, this is a French word mostly associated with wine. Can you tell us what it means, terroir, in grits?
Yes. Well, what he was referring to really was this idea that, you know, he was getting his grits from small batch millers and producers, and the corn that they were milling they're heirloom varieties of corn that are now being starting to be revived and grown in different parts of the South. And so what he was saying is that you could taste the difference between, you know, a blue corn that's milled a certain way and a red corn that's milled a certain way. And those corns, depending on where they were grown, can evoke the flavors of the soil that they're grown in and the location that that they can bring with them. And so what he was getting at was, just like wine, you know, grits are really just a ground corn product. And so you're essentially getting all of the flavors that the corn brings from where it's grown.
Well, okay, so we're hearing that more from foodie people, that you can taste terroir in chocolate, or you can taste where coffee is grown. Can you really taste a bowl of grits and say, oh, that's from North Carolina?
I wouldn't be able to pinpoint where, personally. He might, but I think there is something to, if you wanted to taste these, like I said, these small batch millers and growers who are creating grits from different varieties of corn. If you were to cook them the same, taste them side by side, you would taste a little nuance and a little difference.
Okay, for a lot of people, grits are either light yellow grain that come in a package of Quaker instant grits, like were used for the fire ants. Are those real grits?
They are. They absolutely are. I mean, the thing is, you know, instant grits, the way that they're processed, it just they're a lot of things are stripped out of the corn. And so you do get the corn in there, but you also have other nutrients that are put back into it. So they are grits, and they are totally viable, and they feed a lot of people. So they are. But what we're seeing now are, you know, different varieties coming up and different producers making them.
So you write that this book was a part of an intentional quest to understand and appreciate the South. Why were grits the vehicle for sliding into that?
Well, you know, anytime I'm in a new place, a new region, or traveling or getting to know a place that I've just moved to, I'm always fascinated by learning through about that place through its food. And when I got to the South, I realized that, you know, there were a lot of things that I didn't understand and wanted to better understand, including our history and a lot of different cultural differences between where I had been living and where I was living now. So for me, anytime you dig into a food story or research a food topic or food history, you start to uncover these, you know, these little stories that maybe wouldn't come up in daily life. And so for me, the research allowed me to really not just talk about food and think about where this physical product was coming from, but really understand the people who had been ushering it, it throughout history, but also into our modern era.
Mm-hmm. Well, you did a similar thing with shucked, your book about oysters in the past, but this is a whole different region of the world. But let's go back to that origins of grits. What did you learn about where they come from and how far back we can trace them?
Yeah, well, I think so many people associate them with the Southeast of the United States. But what I learned and what I started in a lot of research and rabbit hole digging, you know, you can actually trace it back to the origins of corn. So, you know, corn is starting to get cultivated 9 or 10,000 years ago in central Mexico. And there's evidence of these hand tools that are like a, you know, a rudimentary mortar and pestle grinding mechanism that people would use to, and there's, you know, evidence that they were using that with corn. And so right when corn is, you know, being cultivated and brought along, people are grinding the kernels, and I'm making the leap, but I'm guessing they're also putting those kernels with water, heating them over a fire and creating a porridge. You know, that's basically the basic origins of where grits started. And of course, they move along with the corn itself, but they arrive, they, you know, corn doesn't really arrive in the U.S. until, or the southeastern U.S. until about 2,000 years ago. So we, you know, we attribute it to this region, but really it goes back much further.
Well, and it now is the official prepared food of the state of Georgia, grits. How did grits become Southern in particular?
Well, I think that, you know, there are a lot of theories about, you know, why a certain dish sticks to a certain area. In the South, especially, I think that, unfortunately, our history with slavery kind of brought it closer to this region. Grits were, like many things, kind of a fuel food, and they were inexpensive, and you could grow the corn and also grind it. And so, you know, massive numbers of people were using that as sustenance in this part of the country. And it sticks, and it's not just food of one race. It really was the food of everybody, because, you know, if enslaved communities were eating it, people in the big house were eating it, and it ends up sort of throughout, you know, time, it kind of migrates with all classes and all races. But I think because so many people were eating that as sustenance in this part of the country, it kind of got its sticking point here in the Southeast.
We're talking about grits, a cultural and culinary journey through the South. It's a new book by my guest, food writer Aaron Byers Murray. Well, that question about origins is a big discussion in food in general, but especially about Southern food right now. And as you said, as you're uncovering this story, so much more gets revealed. You write in the book, name any dish that is considered Southern, trace it back far enough, and you will unearth stories of theft, slavery, appropriation, and loss. That's the questions we've talked about a lot on this program. Who can say what is Southern food, and does anybody own grits? But is that, for your purposes, as you were discovering this, the right question?
Well, I don't believe it is, because you cannot put an ownership on this. You know, if you try to, it gets sticky. And so I think what the bigger question is, like, why is this, how does this dish become so universal? Because it really is beyond it's beyond who owns it and who eats it every day and who's allowed to prepare it. You know, it's much more about, you know, how can we share this dish and how can we share the stories of this dish? And because eventually it's a common ground, right?
Well, I would hope so. I mean, but we did talk about, you know, it was Central Americans moved to the United States. It was a Native American dish, a dish of, as you said, the enslaved people and the people living in the big house. So there's an evolution here. But you just said, who's allowed to prepare it? I'd love to know more about that. Who often ends up preparing grits?
Well, now we're seeing, you know, it's really showing up on so many fine dining menus. It's being sort of vaulted into fine dining by chefs, and many of them are male. Traditionally, you know, it was women who were the ones cooking this dish and bringing it, you know, along through history. They were probably the ones growing the corn, and then they were also the ones grinding it and then cooking it. But in, you know, probably around the 80s, grits became a popular dish, and it has since kind of turned into, you know, been brought into other hands. That's, you know, not to say that we can't go back and honor and celebrate the women who brought it this far, but I think that right now what you're seeing is just, it's a lot more, it's getting a lot of other kinds of attention because it's being put on fine dining room tables.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is funny to me. I remember, you know, seeing somebody eating polenta in an Italian restaurant and saying that, you know, this used to be the food of peasants. And mm-hmm. there's a way that, like, this cheap lobster used to be the food of the poor. It's very interesting how these things have evolved. And you talk to some of these grits gurus along the way, you know, from Anson Mills, you know, growers, millers, cooks, people who are spending a lot of time and energy elevating, as you said, vaulting grits. What did you learn from them about how they are regarding this food that is simple, and how are they keeping it true to its origins?
Well, I think what many of the growers and millers today, especially those the ones you mentioned, Anson Mills, another, you know, Geechee Boy Mill, you know, they really are looking at it as you know, the farming element. So they're looking at the corn product itself, and they're trying to revive these historic grains that almost disappeared, basically, because they had been bred out or they had, you know, been replaced by GMO crops. And so, you know, these corns and these varieties, which they're trying to plant and grow and use and, you know, be able to regenerate, it is a nod back to the past. It's a nod back to how, you know, before industrialization and before modern milling became such a big industry, you know, this was what, you know, growers, you know, cooks, gardeners were doing. This is, they were growing corn in their garden. They were taking it to the mill, and they were, you know, this was the sustenance, you know. So in some ways, they're honoring that. In other ways, they're creating products that, you know, are now a little higher price.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a $6 to $10 bag of grits of a $1.89 at the supermarket, which, of course, there's a big difference in those two.
Yeah, I think what you also see, you know, in a lot of my understanding and research, you know, 99% of people who are eating grits right now are eating Quaker, Jim Dandy, Aunt Jemima. You mm-hmm. know, they are still eating the box of grits that you can find on the shelf. And they're not all instant. They're all, you know, they have old-fashioned grits. They have slow-cooking grits. So it's, you know, what most people are actually getting is what you find in the grocery store. These small batch producers, I think, are doing their part, but we have to understand that with that comes the price of their work.
Yeah, that so much gets revealed. There's so many little details about grits. Big moment in politics when President Jimmy Carter ran for the White House. The national media scrutinized his dietary habits. You know, call out and look at your own whiteness and the weight of researching this book. But I'm wondering about, you know, what were some of the assumptions that you maybe set out with that were dismantled along the way? Or what were you most surprised to learn about grits?
I think the history of where grits come from, and that there, you know, there is such a Native American influence on this dish and so many of our foodways that are unacknowledged, was a big, you know, that was a big learning curve for me, and understanding, you know, how you assume grits and the naming of grits and where grits start and go to, you know, you just assume that it's got a locational, you know, relationship. But my big learning was not only that, not only how deep the history goes, but also that it has become such a universal dish. I mean, you can find a version of grits, a corn-based forage, in cultures all over the planet, you know, all over the world. So really it's that going from, you know, attributing what we can, you know, how much we can to the people who actually got it to this point, and then understanding now that it's not one group's or one region's food and identity. It really can be a universal product.
Well, we do also have a recipe. You make a call to action. Tell people it's time to go out and buy a bag of stone ground grits from a local mill and to make them and offer a basic recipe, which we are going to post on our website at gpbnews.org. Super quick, what's your favorite way to eat grits?
Oh, shrimp and grits, always. A Creole version, yes. Sausage, some andouille, shrimp, mushrooms, that's my favorite.
All right, Erin Byers-Murray, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thanks for having me.
That's the food writer Erin Byers-Murray. Her most recent book is called Grits, A Cultural and Culinary Journey Through the South. Her recipe for good grits at gpbnews.org. Now, you can always join our conversation on our Facebook group. What's your favorite way to prepare grits? GPB Radio's On Second Thought. We're also on Twitter at OST Talk. And that's our show for today. On Second Thought is produced by Sirpa Brock's daughter, Jan Rowell's daughter, Yolanda Love Palmer's daughter, and also Sean Rose Kiley's daughter is our senior producer. Irma Smith's son is our editor. I'm Patricia Prescott's daughter. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a wonderful Mother's Day weekend. Go sing some waterfalls. Open some chocolates, smell some flowers, make some breakfast, do whatever. Enjoy yourself, and we'll be back on Monday with more of On Second Thought.